Ask an Astronomer for February 2008 is part of the Jodcast. For the full show, please go to jodcast.net.
Ask an Astronomer time, and for this episode, Dr. Edward Boyce is answering your questions. So thanks again, Edward, for coming in and answering questions.
You're welcome, Nick. It's always fun.
Oh, yes. First question is from Mark Ashley, and he writes, I often hear about probes and satellites being sent to one of the Lagrange points for a stable orbit. There seem to be a lot of probes and satellites going there, so obviously a Lagrange point is more of a volume than a true point. So the question is, how big is a Lagrangian point?
Well, the Lagrange points are exact points, but as Mark has deduced, spacecraft move around in a big volume surrounding those points. There are 5 Lagrange points where the gravitational forces of the Earth and the Sun combine to keep a satellite right at that spot. It moves around the Sun at the same angular speed as the Earth, so it's always in the same position relative to the Sun and the Earth. Now, when it's close to a Lagrange point, a spacecraft can orbit around the exact position, using only a tiny bit of fuel to stay in that region. Take the example of the WMAP satellite, which we say is at the Lagrange point L2. WMAP doesn't sit right at that point, it moves around it, and it's actually 25,000 to 250,000 kilometers away from L2, depending on which part of its orbit the spacecraft is in. So you can put many spacecraft near the same Lagrange point. L2, which is on the opposite side of the Earth from the Sun, about 1.5 million kilometers away, has WMAP there right now. And in the next decade, it should get Planck, Gaia, and the James Webb Space Telescope. These various spacecraft will be tens of thousands of kilometers apart, which is still pretty close on the scale of the solar system, but big enough that a spacecraft a few meters across won't bang into another one.
So I guess that's the question, isn't it? How likely is it that the Lagrange points get so crowded that we're going to have bits of spacecraft floating there in a few decades' time? So you're saying that the chances of a collision there are pretty remote?
Oh, they're very remote, yes, because, yeah, it is a case of you move around the Lagrange point, you know, on an orbit that's tens or hundreds of thousands of kilometers wide, which is, you know, still looks very much the same point relative to all the planets and the Sun and the Earth. And, you know, you can stay there for a few years with using only a tiny amount of fuel. That's why we put the spacecraft at those points.
Mm, very good. Next question from Mark Ashley is, some time ago, I remember hearing that gravitational waves propagate indefinitely throughout the universe without attenuation, without getting smaller. Is this true? If so, how is it true? Why doesn't it break the conservation of energy law?
Gravitational waves do propagate throughout the universe, but they also get weaker as they go along, just like electromagnetic waves, optical light, X-rays, radio waves, and those sorts of things. So gravitational waves have to conserve energy, so as they spread out over a bigger area, the energy per unit of area goes down. Now, there are 2 things about gravitational waves which are special, and that Mark, hearing one of those things might explain why Mark thought that gravitational waves don't get weaker. Now, the first special thing is that gravitational waves are hardly absorbed at all by matter between us and the source. So if some object sends out electromagnetic waves, light or, you know, X-rays, even a tiny bit of stuff in the way might block that radiation so it doesn't reach us at Earth. But if an object sends out gravitational waves, they have to get out into the universe and reach our detectors. There just can't be enough matter to block them.
Mm.
And so they will get weaker, but they won't get blocked by something in the way.
So they will attenuate, they will get less in amplitude simply through their spreading out throughout the universe, but nothing is going to stop them, nothing is going to block them.
Yes, that's right. They don't get completely wiped out by a lump of gas sitting in the way, which can easily happen to a light beam.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing that is a little bit different about detecting gravitational waves is that all of the detectors that have been set up measure the gravitational wave strain, and that's a measure of how much space stretches when the gravitational wave goes past. The strain actually falls off linearly with the distance from the source, while the energy in a gravitational wave, or in an electromagnetic wave, falls off as the square of the distance.
Hmm.
So, to take an example, if you've got some source and you move it twice as far away, the strain goes down to half of the original value, but the energy in the wave drops down to 1/4 of the original value. So, all those electromagnetic telescopes measure the energy, and so sources get faint pretty quickly as they get more distant, because they're falling away as the square of the distance. Whereas a gravitational wave telescope is measuring strain, and the distant sources don't get faint quite as rapidly. I suppose the real problem is that gravitational waves are really weak to begin with.
Mm.
So, you know, at the moment our detectors can't see them, they're not quite sensitive enough. But when we do get detectors sensitive enough to pick up gravitational waves, it will be easier to push out to larger distances. You won't have as much of a dropping off in energy once you start saying, oh, let's go and try and detect gravitational waves from even more distant places in the universe.
Very good. Thank you very much. Next question comes from Max, and he suggested a way of escaping from Ian Morrison. Now, Ian Morrison in this case is not the bloke who does the night sky for us every month. It is, in fact, an asteroid named after Ian Morrison, called Asteroid Ian Morrison. We had a question a while ago, how could you escape from Asteroid Ian Morrison? Could you simply jump off it, or what speed you need to achieve to escape from Ian Morrison? So Max suggests that perhaps you could use a trampoline to escape from Ian Morrison.
Okay, so as Nick said, this question refers to the asteroid Ian Morrison, and we know that this asteroid is 8 kilometres in diameter, and last month David Ault told us, let's assume that it has twice the density of water, a good guess for an asteroid, and so you have an escape velocity of 4.4 metres per second. If you can jump up from the surface at that speed, or faster, then you'll just keep on going up, and the asteroid's gravity will never pull you back down. Now, the problem is that even the very best humans can't jump up at 4.5 metres per second. The world record high jumper has only gone up at 3.5 metres per second. And so, you know, can't actually jump up and get the escape velocity. Now, Max's suggestion of using a trampoline to boost your velocity is a pretty good one, and it almost works. When you land on a trampoline, sort of going down, it pushes you back up with almost the same speed you had coming down automatically without you doing anything. And if you push off a little bit extra, then you add to that speed. And so that's how you can keep jumping higher. You add an extra push and you keep increasing your speed with every bounce. Now on Earth, you can easily get to a point where you're bouncing up to a height of 1.5 meters. So we know that trampolines can boost you to a speed of 6 meters per second when you leave the trampoline. You have to have 6 meters per second if you're going to get 1.5 meters up in the air. So the trampoline can store just as much energy in its springs when it's on an asteroid. It's going to work the same way. So if you could bounce up and down on the trampoline a few times on the asteroid, you would actually get your speed up above 4.5 meters per second, and then you would escape. Unfortunately, there's a real problem with bouncing several times on the trampoline when you're on the asteroid, because the gravity is so weak. Say your first jump, you go up at 2 meters a second. On Earth, you'd come back down very quickly and after only going a short distance upwards. But on the asteroid with the weak gravity, you'd go about a kilometre above the surface. And then you'd have to come down another kilometre, and the whole process would take at least half an hour. This is just because the asteroid has such weak gravity. Meanwhile, while you're up there, you know, going a kilometre up above the asteroid and then coming down again, the asteroid's going to be rotating under you.
Yes.
And you're going to be moving around in your orbit, but you're going to be rotating around the asteroid at a different speed by the time you get several hundred metres above the surface, because you've gone from being 4 kilometres away from the centre to being 4.5 kilometres away from the centre. So when you come back down, you're not going to land on the same bit of the asteroid, and you're going to miss your trampoline.
So you're going to go splat.
Well, you're going to go splat. I mean, you wouldn't hurt yourself. It would be like falling off a trampoline on the Earth and landing on the ground at, you know, 2 or 3 metres per second, but... you're certainly not going to hit the trampoline several times in a row to get those multiple bounces and build up your speed. You'd have to cover the whole asteroid with trampolines to make sure you kept hitting them. There is a more practical way to get off the asteroid. You sort of just go around picking up rocks and putting them in a bag that you're carrying, and keep doing this until you've got your own mass in rocks. And then what you have to do is jump up off the surface. And maybe when you're carrying all the rocks, you can only jump up at 0.5 meter per second. But even so, you'll be up above the surface for about 8 minutes. Now, during those 8 minutes, take out the rocks and start throwing them back down at the surface. Now, when you're throwing objects, you can easily throw them at 5 meters per second. And so, within a few minutes, you should have thrown your own mass downwards at 5 meters per second. And the total momentum of yourself and the rocks has to be conserved. It has to stay at zero overall. So if your mass in rocks is going down at 5 metres per second, you've started going up at 5 metres per second. And so that boosts you up to escape velocity. And so, basically, the best way to escape from Ian Morrison is to throw things at Ian Morrison.
Very good. Thank you very much, Edward. It was a great answer. And thank you very much to Max for an interesting question, which had a slightly more complicated answer when you start thinking about it. But do please keep those questions coming in. So thank you very much, Mark, Ashley, and Max. And thanks very much again to Edward for answering them.
You're welcome, Nick.